I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. Charter schools were started to give parents and students a choice when it comes to public education. They're not controlled by many of the same regulations that guide traditional public schools. Charters are designed to have more autonomy to innovate and to be more accountable. They've also been promoted as a better alternative to a public school education. Some 70,000 students in Pennsylvania attended one of the state's 135 bricks and mortar charter schools and a dozen cyber charters this year. One quarter of the students in Philadelphia attended one of those schools. So how well are charters doing in meeting their educational goals, providing competition for other public schools, and giving families real choice? We will begin our conversation with Deb Davis. She's a research manager at the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, or CREDO, at Stanford University, and the center published a new study of Pennsylvania charter schools. And Deb Davis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me begin broadly and comparing Pennsylvania's charters to other states that you looked at. How would you compare and contrast?
Sure. Pennsylvania actually ranks near the bottom in both reading and math compared to the other states that we've done reports for, and that's about, I think, 17 other states or 18 other states at this point.
And near the bottom, and how did you come to that conclusion?
So what we do is we find all of the charter students that have test scores, and we find traditional public school students who look exactly like them on all of the demographics that we can that we get from the state. And then we also find the starting test score for both the charter students and the traditional public school students. So we match them on all of their characteristics, including test score, from the beginning. And then we look at growth thereafter at traditional public schools and then at charter schools. And we find that on average, Pennsylvania charter students do significantly worse in both reading and math than their traditional public school counterparts. Exactly like them.
And I want to pick all that apart. You also found a great deal of variability, and there is some good news, I guess, coming out of this report, in that there are some charters where kids are doing pretty well. Yes?
That's exactly right. This story definitely is not at the average. We have a large distribution in reading. There are 30% of the schools do better, significantly better than their traditional public school alternatives. And in math, it's 25% of the charter schools do better than their traditional alternative.
And what explains that, do you think?
It's really a good question. We don't know how is it that you can have schools with the same operating foundations and, you know, governing under the same rules, but having different results. What it really tells us is that flexibility is good for those schools that are doing well and that they have lessons that they can teach both other charter schools that are struggling and other traditional public schools. And then for other schools that are not doing as well, there needs to be heightened accountability for those schools to actually either start doing better or to eventually get closed.
Now, this report does not name the schools that you're talking about. Why didn't you do that?
We actually haven't done that for any of the reports that we've done. So we've just like to look at the landscape as a whole instead of pointing fingers at different schools.
Well, the reason I ask is that the findings are interesting and could be helpful in trying to figure out, certainly in Pennsylvania, what schools are working and why, and what schools are not working and why.
Right, and we are open to working with the state on doing those specific things, but that's not something that we want to make available to the general public before we talk to the state education department about that.
Now, looking at this study, it looked at for charters, at least in the elementary school level, they seem to be doing better than charters for middle school students. Can you talk about that?
I really don't know the real reasons why. It's hard to get sort of through the black box, but one of our hypotheses about that is that elementary school students at charter schools are more likely to have grown up charter and to have not ever had a traditional public school experience. So it's possible that when you get the kids earlier, it's easier to get them on a footing much earlier so that you can take care of all of their deficits earlier and then grow from there.
You also found, and this is looking at the cyber charter schools, there are about a dozen in Pennsylvania, is that they performed much worse than certainly than other charters, but also public schools as well. Talk about that.
Sure. Pennsylvania is the only state that we've seen where 30% of the charter students attend cyber schools. So this was a really a new area for us, and so we really wanted to pick that apart. And we do see that when we break out the results between brick-and-mortar charters and cyber charters, that the brick-and-mortar charters are actually about on par with traditional public schools in reading, and then they're just a little bit lower in math. The cyber charters are much lower in both reading and math. So we started out looking at the demographics of the brick-and-mortar charters versus the cyber charters, and we find that brick-and-mortar charters are 74% Black and Hispanic, and contrast that with the cyber charters are 80% white.
Oh.
So there's a big difference in what those students look like, and it goes on for income as well. Brick-and-mortar charters are 69% free and reduced price lunch, while cyber charters are 42% free and reduced price lunch. So the majorities are flipped there. So the population looks very different, and it's also possible that they look different on things that we couldn't observe. So what we hear from the cyber charter community is that those students were not doing well in traditional public schools, and they may have dropped out. And so what we're seeing is cyber charters are actually retaining kids, possibly, in school that may have dropped out had they not had that alternative. So that's one possibility. We're not really sure what we're seeing, to be perfectly honest.
Is that right? Because, you know, when you see figures like that, it certainly raises a whole host of questions about whether cyber charters are really doing the job that they're supposed to do. And if you're looking at a population that's maybe not as at risk as some of these brick and mortar charters, it does raise a whole host of questions, it seems.
That's true. And the answer might be that they need more accountability for their results.
So what is the message from the study? And I know you've looked at other states and looked at other charter schools in other states. For people that are reading this report and trying to figure out how to apply some of the findings, what's the message, do you think?
Sure. Our message is really, our perspective is the policy landscape. And so when we see results like this that are really uneven, where we have many charters that are doing much better, and we see charters that are also doing significantly worse than their traditional counterparts, what we see there is that's sort of a confused landscape, that there is flexibility, and that's good, but maybe there isn't the accountability that there needs, that there needs to be. So solid charter legislation and stronger authorizing. And I know there is strong support from the Charter Support Organization in Pennsylvania. So those other two sort of legs of the policy landscape need to be strengthened.
And about a quarter of school students in Philadelphia attend a charter school. Is it possible to talk a little bit about the population that we are talking about, broadly speaking, when you talk about charter schools across Pennsylvania?
Sure. I'm going to have to
look sounds like you're looking something looking something up there.
Yeah. So what we see is that almost half of the students are Black, and then another 9% are Hispanic or Latino. The majority, 61%, are low income, so they're on free or reduced price lunch. And then about 13% are special education students.
I'm curious about those special education students and how do they fare within charter schools?
It's about the same as in traditional public schools. And again, we're looking at growth. We're not looking at just levels of achievement. So the growth is about the same.
And how about English learners?
English learners, actually, it's an interesting kind of finding. We see that at charter schools, they're about the same in reading, but they're better in math than traditional public schools.
Again,
that is a very small population, though.
It is. Okay, so it's hard to extrapolate from that?
Yes, definitely.
And this is, This your organization has been looking at charter schools in Pennsylvania and other states as well. And again, sort of broadly speaking, how would you say the charter school movement is faring in the United States, even beyond Pennsylvania?
Well, I think in places like Indiana that just passed a very strong accountability law, but also allowed for still more flexibility. In places like Indiana, it's doing wonderfully. And then there are other places where, again, we need to strengthen that accountability and need solid charter legislation. So it's really a mixed bag all across the United States
And what is Stanford University's interest in this? I mean, it's a rich area to study.
Yeah, we're really just interested in improving education for kids and finding out what's out there right now and ways to make it better.
And is there any way to know whether charter schools have used competition or a part of a competitive mode in order to get public schools to perform better? Because that's certainly been part of the philosophy and how charters have been promoted.
That's actually one of our next areas to look at.
Oh, is that right?
We haven't looked at that yet.
So that's something that's in the works?
It is, yes.
And are there more charters in Pennsylvania than in other states?
It depends on the size of the state. There are hundreds of charters in places like Texas and California, but there is definitely a healthy market in Pennsylvania.
And, you know, have you looked at sort of why Pennsylvania? I know Philadelphia has been important because there's been a lot of experimentation and innovation happening in Philadelphia. Do you think that has driven some of the charter movement in Pennsylvania?
I think so, yes.
And will you continue to look at charters and to continue research looking at Pennsylvania charter schools?
Yes, we would definitely like to do that.
And were charters opened for, did they, in a sense, open their books to you to do this kind of research?
We actually got an agreement with the state education department to get the data from both the charter schools and the traditional public schools.
So we able to get
them to match.
Were you able to get information from both charters and public schools?
Yes.
So were you able to look at all the charter schools in Pennsylvania then?
All the schools that had test scores between the 2006-07 school year and the 2009-10 school year. So you'll see, for example, there are a dozen cyber charters now, but we were only able to include 8 in our study.
Well, on that note, Dev Davis, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Research Manager at the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, or CREDO, at Stanford University. And the center published a new study about Pennsylvania charter schools, and that's our topic for today's Radio Times. We have two guests who are waiting in the wings, and we'd love to hear from you about how you make a choice about where to send your child to school. Have you considered charters? Are you looking at public schools? How do you weigh the kind of choice and options that charters and public schools offer? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chemical Heritage Foundation supports WHYY. Help celebrate the International Year of Chemistry with CHF's Independence Day-themed science fair. Observe chemistry experiments designed to produce smoke, colors, and a few bangs. Make your own lava lamps or discuss Civil War-era medicine with a historian in period costume. This first Friday, July 1st, from 1 to 8 p.m. More information online at chemheritage.org/firstfriday.
This is Ed Cunningham. Listeners have made a difference for WHYY all year with their support. Now, as we close in on the end of our fiscal year, listener support is more important than ever. Please help us keep fiscally sound with your support. 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. You make everything you hear on WHYY possible, and we thank you.
Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil were only in their 20s when they wrote the classic pop tune, You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling.
We never imagined that it would be the most performed song of the 20th century.
That's Cynthia Weil with husband and songwriting partner Barry Mann. We get the stories behind the hits this week on Sound Opinions.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Motz-Cohen. We just said goodbye to Dev Davis from Stanford University about their new report on Pennsylvania's charter schools, our topic for today's Radio Times. And joining us now is Robert Fayfinch, Interim Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. And Bob Fayfinch, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Pleasure to join you.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us is Gary Miron. He's a professor of education at Western Michigan University. He has extensive experience evaluating school reforms and education policies. He, too, has conducted state evaluations of charter school reforms, including two in Pennsylvania. And Gary Miron, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Robert Fayfinch, let me begin with you and actually quote something from the introduction to this Stanford University report. More than a quarter of the charter schools, this is in Pennsylvania, have significantly more positive learning gains than their traditional public school counterparts in reading, but their performance is eclipsed by nearly half of charter schools that have significantly lower learning gains. What's your response to the conclusion of this report?
We don't take any issue at all with the findings in it, and it actually reinforces and gives some statistical background to what we knew intuitively, that there are outstanding charter schools in this state, and there are charter schools that could improve in their performance. So the results are not a surprise to us.
And do you know the names of those outstanding schools that are doing well in Pennsylvania?
Interestingly, I heard the discussion with Dev, and actually, Dev and I and other people.
Oops. It sounds like we might have lost Bob Fayfinch. Is he
Hello?
There? Okay, no, go ahead. We just heard a little glitch there, but go ahead, Bob
okay.
Fayfinch. So do you know the names of these outstanding charters?
Actually, I listened to Dev in the earlier part of this program, and Dev and some other people and I had conversations earlier in this process. And the first question we ask is, this is great to have this top-line number, but what we want to do is focus on and understand why some of the schools are performing better than others and others aren't performing, and ask for the identification of the schools. And as she mentioned to you, she was not able to give that to us. So we are going to be asking the Pennsylvania Department of Education to see if we can share that, they are willing to share that information so that we can learn what the best schools are doing and then share those best practices. So, yes, absolutely.
And I will get back to that. Gary Miron, let me get you in on the conversation. And you, too, have done studies of charter schools. What's your response to this Stanford University study?
I think it is largely in line with the larger body of evidence that we've seen across the country. Typically, when we see larger scale studies of that examine student achievement in charter schools, the results tend to be negative. In the media, when they cover small-scale studies or case studies or anecdotes, they tend to be more positive. But again, when we go to those more independent national studies or those sponsored by state or federal agencies, they tend to be more negative.
Well, and this is a broad description of what they came up with, about a third of charters in Pennsylvania doing better than public schools, about a third doing about the same, and a third that are doing worse. Gary Miron, does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. In their broader body of evidence, their first study that Credo came out with, I think they had 17% of the schools were doing significantly better, 37% were doing significantly worse, and the rest were no significant difference.
Does this raise questions in your mind, Gary Miron, about whether charters are really doing the job that they're supposed to do?
It raises questions. Obviously, it's charter schools are going to be highly accountable schools, and schools that don't perform, they're going to be shut down and turned around. This reform movement is 2 decades old now. It's 2 decades old, and we're still, after repeated studies, we're still coming up with the same answers. And yet, somehow, in national headlines, we're constantly bringing up the issue of charter schools as a solution. And unfortunately, the evidence isn't there. My own evidence from state evaluations confirms what they found in the Credo study, that there are successful schools in every state that we study. And there's also some states that are more successful than others. But when we look at the broader picture, the reform idea as a whole hasn't lived up to its promises.
What's your response to that, Bob Fayfitch?
Well, in Pennsylvania, the charter legislation was in 1996. It hasn't been 2 decades. It's only been since 1996 that charters have been approved in to be authorized in Pennsylvania. And I absolutely agree that we need to have updates in our legislation to strengthen the authorizers and to look at what charters are doing well and what they're not doing well and improve them. But the movement is younger in Pennsylvania than it is in some other states.
But it has been sold and promoted as an alternative to public schools, as a chance to provide more innovation in education, but also this issue of accountability. And Bob Fayfitch, has there been enough accountability for charters?
Just let me back up on one point. Charter schools are public schools, so it's an issue of not traditional schools versus charter schools. It's traditional public schools, and charter schools are public schools funded by tax dollars. So has the accountability been as strong as it should be? Probably not. And should it be strengthened? Yes. And is that proposed and pending legislation currently before the House and Senate? Yes. But the legislation hasn't been updated since 1996, so we're dealing with the understanding of the movement as it was in 1996. And there are efforts to do that, which we support. We do not support underperforming schools, public schools of any type.
And what would that accountability look like if passed by the legislature? I don't know. We have a funny phone line here. Let's see if we can put Bob Fayfitch on a better phone line. Gary Miron, let me go back to you. And Pennsylvania is I guess a laboratory, the way other states are. I mean, is it time to rethink charters?
Well, it's time to rethink them, but I also think it's time to revisit the original goals of the charter school reform. I'm one of those that argues that the charter school idea is a very good idea. Unfortunately, what we're seeing implemented today and the growth of charter schools today being fueled by for-profit companies is a very different reform, and I've suggested that we use a different name. Let's call this corporate schools. Let's call them franchise schools. But the charter school idea is a good idea, but unfortunately, we're not pursuing that ideal right now. We're pursuing something different in the name of charter schools. So, yeah, we need to re-examine it, but I also think that we need to revisit the original goals of charter schools.
And what's the difference between a for-profit charter school and the sort of traditional idea of a charter school?
Well, as Robert pointed out, you know, charter schools are public schools.
Right.
Across the nation, however, we're seeing that these public charter school boards contract out the schools to for-profit or non-profit operators, to private operators. And this creates complications not only in terms of the veil of privacy that complicate transparency issues, but it also means management fees and more of the costs that could be devoted to instruction are diverted for corporate fees. Pennsylvania follows, I believe it's the fifth state in terms of the proportion of its schools operated by for-profit education management organizations, or EMOs, as we call them.
And some of those names are?
Well, in Pennsylvania, the big one is K-12, which is a big operator in the cyber schools arena, and only 25% of its schools last year met adequate yearly progress. At the same time, the company's stocks rose by 60%. And there has been revisions to the legislation in Pennsylvania, especially as it regards cyber schools. They are trying to make adjustments. They have been making adjustments over time. Unfortunately, what's been changing is that it's morphing towards a new reform, one driven by these larger operators.
Let me give Bob Fayfitch a chance. We'll get him back in on the conversation here. And Gary Miron was talking about some of these for-profit companies that are getting into the charter school business. Do you favor that, Bob, or are you a critic of that? How do you see that?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think that education-driven for-profit solely is not a good motivation. And, again, the legislation that is proposed right now addresses that. Prohibits for-profit companies from doing that. And again, it's proposed at this point.
Right.
I do not think that education that is something that should be in a pure for-profit motive.
And is that the position of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools?
We haven't discussed it as a position. This, I'm just giving you my feeling right now on this opinion.
And Gary Mirren, how does a program like KIPP, how does that figure in this discussion?
KIPP is a nonprofit operator. I believe it's one of the more serious operators out there. Earlier this year, we did a study on KIPP, and KIPP, as you know, it goes after many of the more impoverished populations. Mm-hmm. But when we looked at the data, we saw that there was a selective entry process, which means that many of the children with special needs were not coming to the school. The school markets itself as a college prep school, so there was some self-selection by parents. But also we just saw generally in the population that there was a selective process going on. In particular, KIPP is using a placement or admissions test in many of their schools that also dissuades some families from applying. But more strikingly, we saw a selective exit process with close to a third of the students leaving between grades 6 and 8, and many of them are the low-performing students. Among African-American males, 40% had left the schools in those 2 years. And then we also found in terms of dollars that they were receiving close to $6,500 more per pupil. So it's a successful model based on independent research in terms of the students that persist, but we're not certain the results of our study question whether this might be a viable model for reform.
And are these students leaving these KIPP schools because they can't do the work, or are the schools not providing the kind of support these kids need? How do you understand that?
Our understanding is that most of them are leaving in part because they're asked to repeat grades. When KIPP is not able to educate a student and get that child to learn 1 year of content within their extended school year, the child has an option, which is to repeat a grade. And a very high proportion of the children are asked to repeat grades. And in many cases, those students just leave the school.
And that's Gary Mirren. He's a professor of education at Western Michigan University. Bob Fafich, also with us, interim director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. And we are talking about charter schools here in Pennsylvania. And there are many of them, and some are doing better than others. And that was one of the conclusions of the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, or CREDO. And we're talking about what works and what doesn't work when it comes to charters, and some of the questions that have been raised about the mission of charter schools as well. 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And if you're a parent who has been considering public school for your child, how do you think about charters? How do you think about the traditional public schools? And do give us a call. Bob Fafich, let me go back to you and even go back to the whole notion of charters. In terms of accepting students, what are the criteria that charters use in order to accept students?
Charters are public schools, and charters need to accept everyone who applies to the school. Let me explain what happens. A parent applies to a charter, and if more parents apply than the charter is able to accept, they have to conduct a random selection, usually a lottery, for who gets into the schools. So it is they have to accept anyone who applies who gets through the lottery. Now, there is a self-selection relative to parents taking initiative to apply, so that does have some impact on the demographics that eventually result in a charter. But charters are public schools and need to accept everyone who applies and gets through the lottery, if the lottery is necessary.
So there is no admissions test, so to speak, to get into a charter?
That's correct.
Gary Mirren, you were talking about KIPP. I mean, it sounds like you think that there is a kind of admissions test there.
They do, and they've admitted to that. Now, after our study came out, official from Baltimore Public Schools identified this admissions testing. The KIPP representative responded by saying that they only use this test in 5 regions of the country, which was quite a surprise to me, and that they would stop using it in Baltimore at that point. But that was the KIPP spokesman who spoke of that.
Do they use it in Pennsylvania?
I've contacted KIPP and asked to which of the 5 regions that they use it in, and I haven't gotten any response.
Oh, interesting. Well, let me get some callers in on the conversation, and we have, looks like, Alice joining us on Radio Times. And, Alice, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to speak on behalf as a proponent of charter schools. Mm-hmm. I have 3 kids in a charter school here in Souderton, and they've been in the charter school since kindergarten, all 3 of them, and my first is getting ready to go to high school. And I have to say, the school district when the charter school was first forming way back in the mid-90s, I will tell you the school district at large fought tooth and nail, and it's a brick-and-mortar charter school, let me say that as well, fought tooth and nail to oppose us, and I will tell you we are now one of the top-performing schools in not only the district, but in Montgomery County at large.
And Elise, what's the name of this school, just so we know who we're talking about here?
Yeah, you know what? It's the Souderton Charter School Collaborative.
Fair enough. Well, let me give Gary Miron just a chance to respond. And she described the local public school district fighting this charter school. Does that happen, Gary?
Certainly it does at times, and it really depends on the population of students that the charter schools are serving. Some charter schools go out and serve some of the most neediest students who have been not well served in the traditional public schools. And often we see districts eager to support those charter schools and even finding in-kind ways to assist them. But other schools that are setting up, other charter schools that are serving students that compete with that same population of students that are well served in the traditional public schools, then there's more animosity.
And to you, Bob Feifetch, what do you think should be the relationship, I guess, between these traditional public schools and these public charter schools?
Hopefully it would be a partnership, because charters were originally created to try new ideas and new techniques to improve teaching. And they should be an asset to traditional public schools. And those that are doing the best are the ones that see it more as an asset and a partner in improving education for children. Those that are more threatened by it, and there's more animosity exists, are the ones that are concerned about it being a competition to the schools. And it should not be a competition. It should be a partnership.
Elise, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Bob, what is the obligation or the responsibility that a charter has to a student, let's say a student who's struggling academically?
The same we have for every student, and that is to do everything we possibly can to help that student succeed in whatever he or she wants to do, whether it be a college education or some other thing high school graduation. So one of the things that charters are able to do because of their size is to concentrate on more individual service and developing individual development plans for those students. So the responsibility is the same as it is to every student, that's to bring the resources to help them succeed.
And Gary, about 30 seconds before our break, what's your response to that?
Yeah, I think that's, I agree with Bob. Many schools do that. Of course, many of the charter schools today are striving to get larger numbers of students and economies of scale and creating larger networks of schools. So many of those may not be as responsive as some of those more traditional or originally intended charter schools.
And we are talking about charter schools, a centerpiece of the school choice movement, the subject of much debate and discussion. We are focusing in on Pennsylvania and the charter schools in this state. And the voice you just heard is Gary Miron. He's a professor of education at Western Michigan University, has done a fair amount of research evaluating charter schools. And Robert Feifetch, also with us, interim director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools. And just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Give us a call, especially if you are have children who are in the public school age. We want to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, depressed mood, anxiety, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Teens interested in journalism can use WHYY's production equipment to create news stories based on their interests during the Young Journalist Summer Camp. And for budding young filmmakers, the WHYY Film Academy teaches students to produce their own short films from script to screen. Learn from professionals. Express your ideas. Both camps are for students currently in 9th to 12th grade. Learn more at whyy.org/hamiltoncommons or 215-351-0511.
Rachel Simon's new novel, The Story of Beautiful Girl, is a portrait of great love. But it also tracks the inhumane treatment of developmentally and intellectually disabled individuals who were institutionalized in the 20th century. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, we'll discuss the book and the inhumane treatment of some of our most vulnerable citizens. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen, talking about charter public schools, traditional public schools, with Gary Miron and Bob Fafich, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Gary, before we get back to our callers, I do want to put a question to you, and this is always the frustration I feel when we do programs about public education. Clearly, there are charter schools that are doing a good job. Clearly, there are traditional public schools that are doing a good job. And then there are, of course, schools that are doing an average job and ones that are, frankly, doing a pretty poor job. My frustration is that, do we know what works? And if we know what works, why can't we replicate that and improve education for more students? Gary?
Well, we've been looking at a number of things. We've been thinking about, you know, if we go to charter schools, you know, the original intent was increased autonomy for increased accountability. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, charter schools haven't lived up to some of those promises, but at the same time, the autonomy originally promised to them hasn't been fulfilled either. With re-regulation going on, with No Child Left Behind, forcing charter schools to prepare students and teach the same tests as traditional public schools. So in some regards, charter schools have been pushed to be more like traditional public schools.
But do they need more or less accountability, do you think? I mean, I guess everyone needs accountability, but maybe more or less regulations.
Well, I think, it, especially in terms of outcomes, that they were originally intended to be mission-driven and accountable for different standards. Unfortunately, in part because charter schools weren't able to be proactive and demonstrate success, policymakers eventually stepped in and pushed them towards an accountability system that was more in line with what was being used for traditional public schools.
But you understand my frustration?
Oh, I certainly do, yeah.
May I add to your frustration?
Yes, please go. Add to my frustration. Go ahead.
To a certain extent, under Pennsylvania law currently, charter schools are prohibited from sharing best practices with other charter schools.
Really?
And that is amazing to me. And that is addressed also in the pending legislation, but historically, the legislation was written with good intent, but sometimes you have unintended consequences that makes it very difficult for charter schools to share best practices among themselves.
And you can't see me, Bob Fafich, but my jaw just dropped.
but on top of that,
go ahead, Gary.
With many of the for-profit operators, when we look at their contracts, it's stated in the contracts that the school model, all the way down to anything that the teachers create on the job, because the teachers are employees of the for-profit company. But any and all of that is proprietary in nature.
With the same idea, which is that it cannot be shared.
It cannot be shared without the permission of the company.
Well, let me get Tim from Newtown to join our conversation. And, Tim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Yes, go ahead, Tim.
Thanks, Marty. We chose to go to a cyber charter school after our son in first grade. And first grade in March was coming home and saying, you know, why am I always the last one? And so in second grade, they put him in a special ed class with about eight other little boys. At the end of second grade, he still couldn't add single digits. And we went to the IEP meeting to go, next year in third grade. And we stopped and asked questions. They totally glossed over it and really did made us feel like they were not going to address our son's needs. And we walked out of there and just said, we'll go someplace else. And a cyber charter school was the option for us because it gave us a chance to let him take school more at his own pace and not be in that comparative kind of classroom scenario where he's always looking at others and walking away from there just feeling terrible about himself.
And Tim,
and
how,
so his deficits were really tough.
How's he doing now?
Well, you know, he's still making progress, and that was the thing. We wanted to be in a scenario where he could make progress on his own pace. And we know that we're missing out on some things that happen in the brick-and-mortar schools, but we just had to make a choice for what was going to be best for him.
Well,
and so now we're going into eighth grade, and he's making progress, but, you know, he's still probably not on par with a lot of the children at his own grade level.
Well, let me give Bob Fafich a chance to respond to your call. And, Tim, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Bob, any thoughts?
Well, just generically and more from a number, what we focus on is really choice. And that is the parents should have the ability
to choose what's best for their children. And in that particular case, I think he's done exactly what the charter movement is all about. And they may choose traditional public schools, they may choose charters, they may choose private schools.
We keep losing Bob Feifetch, and I apologize both to Bob Feifetch and to our listeners as well. Gary, let me go back to you. And I mean, this does, part of the whole charter school movement is choice, yes?
Certainly, it's intended as choice, parent choice.
Parent choice, the idea that the parents decide what they think is best for their child.
That's correct.
All right, let me try. Let me see what, where are we? Number three, let me try Paula, get Paula to join our conversation. And Paula, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to, if I could, before I ask my question, if I could just quickly say that I think that charter school movement is really interesting from an intellectual point of view because educational reform is so difficult because there are so many factors that contribute to a kid's success at school, and even within families, at least within my family, there was a wide divergence of academic success. So good luck to everybody who's trying to make this work.
Indeed.
But I share your frustration that you were talking about earlier, Marty, that, it, you know, what the heck. But anyway, so my question was partially answered because I wanted to know if teachers in charter schools were unionized and if they have the same union roles as public school teachers. But one of your guests just mentioned, of course, that in the privately run schools, the teachers are employees
sure.
of the organization. But what about in public charters? You know what I'm trying to say.
I know exactly. I do know what you're trying to say. And Paula, we're losing you a little bit on the phone here. And let me, hopefully Bob Feifetch is back with us. No, he's not back with us. Let me get Gary Miron to respond to that. Gary, are teachers unionized?
Very few of the charter schools have unions right now. Some of the public conversion charter schools, they tend to have the teachers continue to be in a collective bargaining unit, but there's not that many. The number of charter schools that are being unionized is slowly increasing, however. One of the things about charter schools is that even when the teachers are part of a collective bargaining unit, the teachers are considered at-will employees. And this is the greatest piece of autonomy that charter schools have, is that freedom to hire and fire teachers at will.
And would you agree with Paula's analysis that education reform isn't easy?
No, it's very, very complicated. And education, you can't unpack it from our social social community context and economic factors and other things. Mm-hmm. It's very complex.
And we're still trying to get Bob Feifetch back on the phone there. But Gary, going back to you then, what should be done about underperforming charters?
That's a good idea. Right now, the goal seems to be we're not seeing that many being closed down. What we're seeing right now is we're seeing the attention being given to underperforming traditional public schools and proposals in a number of cities across the country to bring in for-profit operators, these education management organizations, to be the tool for turning around these traditional public schools that struggle. But we see in traditional public schools and the charter school sector a number of schools struggling. And one of my greatest concerns is I look at the state economies, I look at the budgets for education and the downward pressure on the budgets, and we have more and more limited resources now being divided across two struggling public school systems instead of one. And that makes it very difficult sometimes to turn around, especially an urban school district, when it can't plan effectively because they have to distribute its resources across two systems that have weaknesses in accountability and performance.
And how much does money matter?
Money matters a lot. And charter schools, on the whole, they receive less money per pupil than traditional public schools. However, this difference is largely accounted for categorical funding directed towards special ed and student support and services and vocational programs and the like. So if charter schools serve more children with severe or moderate disabilities, if charter schools develop vocational programs, they can apply and get more money. But right now, when we look at it nationally, they receive less, but that's accounted for by these differences in categorical funding where charter schools don't provide those services.
Let me get Victoria from Chester County to join us on Radio Times. And Victoria, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My son is 14, and we have experience of 13 years in the public Downingtown School District in Chester County and 1 year in Charter School Collegium in Acton. couldn't be happier.
You know, Victoria, I'm not sure what our problem with the phones are, but clearly we are having problems. Bob Feifetch, hopefully you're back with us.
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Okay, and I'm not exactly sure what's going on. I'm not a technical person, but we are certainly talking about charter schools and some of the successes and some of the challenges of charter schools as well, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Bob, let me just ask you, and even just you have referenced several times some of the legislation here in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Where does that stand? Who is behind it? What can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, there are two bills currently, Senate Bill 904 and House Bill 1348, that are essentially identical bills that are the charter bills. It's driven by the Education Committee on both sides of the House and Senate, those are extremely extensive revisions of the charter legislation currently in place in the state, much more focus on autonomy for the charter schools, broadens the authorizer for charter schools, but also puts in place more accountability requirements for charter schools. And we are supportive of both increasing the number of authorizers and strengthening the authorizers and tightening up on the accountability.
And do you think this will get at some of the real mismanagement of charters in Pennsylvania?
We hope so, but authorizers have to have the ability and guts to close down some of the non-performing schools, whether they be traditional public non-performing or charter non-performing, and that's very difficult to do. We've looked at it, what's happening in other states, it's a very difficult process to accomplish, but it needs to be done.
Gary, from your perspective, what do you think then can and should be done to improve charters?
Well, I think the authorizing is an important thing. You need to have authorizers that, first of all, receive funding, public funding, to do the oversight. When these authorizers don't close poor performing schools, they should be obliged to return that funding. And I think that's really critical. But what we're seeing in a number of states is this concern about authorizers as a mechanism to create new authorizers that are going to be more generous and more lenient in terms of raising and increasing the numbers of charter schools, not necessarily new authorizers that are going to be more closely scrutinize applications and raise the bar.
But do you think this is part of a process to defund traditional public schools?
Yeah,
Gary?
Charter schools as a whole?
Yeah.
Obviously, if charter schools didn't... or if traditional public schools weren't impacted financially, they wouldn't have that competitive response that they should be having. So, yeah, obviously it's intended that it would be a competitive thing and that it would be removing funds from traditional public schools.
And do you think even, it's what, about 15 years, certainly in Pennsylvania about 15 years, but do you think, Gary, that charters have evolved in a kind of sensible timetable?
No, I think we had the answer that we have today. We already had this several years ago, and what we're seeing today, again, is something, a new reform. I want to call it franchise schools or corporate schools. I don't like the word charter schools,
right,
because it doesn't refer to what we're talking about today. Charter schools were envisioned to be locally run, innovative, create new opportunities for teachers and the like. Instead, we're seeing these corporate models with schools being run from across the state or across the country.
And Bob, you mentioned that at least this legislation in Pennsylvania would address that issue, that the corporate, privately run charters?
Yes. But let me take one issue with the charter schools drawing money away from traditional schools. The charter schools, the traditional schools do pay for the charter schools, but the charter schools also take the responsibility for educating that student when they do. And the way the methodology for funding charter schools currently in Pennsylvania is that a charter school student, the home district for that charter school student, is to pass through to the charter school the average cost to educate the student in that district minus a series of deductions that they're able to take under state law for debt service and transportation and other things. On average in Pennsylvania, the districts pass through 70% of that average to the school to the charter,
mm-hmm.
and with that, the responsibility for educating that child, 30% remains with the school district. Then, under current law, the state pays the school district an additional 30% on what the school district had passed through to the charter school. So if there's a $10,000 average for a student in a district, $7,000 would go to the charter school, $3,000 would remain with the school district, and then the school district would get another $2,100, which is 30% of the $7,000, for the cost associated with
To make up the difference there.
Right. So the school districts are passing through money to, and they're transferring the responsibility for educating that child, but they are retaining a significant amount of tax dollars for operational expenses internally.
Well, Gary Marin, final question to you. Looking ahead, what do you hope charters are able to do, or where do you want this movement to go?
I think right now there's a lot of pressure for rapid growth, and I think this is a time right now that we need to stop and rethink things. I think that before we ramp up these reforms, we need to make sure that they work. And what we're seeing instead is more and more proposals for growth and rapid growth. And it's time to really stop and rethink. But I also think for policymakers that they need to revisit the goals of the charter schools. We can see the original goals stated in the 90s when most charter school laws were passed, and they talk about things that aren't on the table today.
Mm.
And so I think if we're going to use that name, let's revisit those goals.
Well, I appreciate both of you joining us today in Radio Times. Gary Miron, thank you very much.
Thanks, Marty.
And Bob Fayfitch, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Interim Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Public Charter Schools, that's Bob Fayfitch, and Gary Miron, Professor of Education at Western Michigan University. I'm Marty Moscowane, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia and WHYY.org, member-supported public media.